there's a series of books for preschoolers that I'm maybe a little too familiar with at the moment because my daughter's really into them, but the premise is that something is not right with the picture that you're given. So for example, it could be that there are four children standing in a row and they're all bundled up to go outside in the snow, and one of them has their jacket on backwards, for example. And the idea is that you go through the pictures and you find the thing that's not right. I remember having a feeling that something wasn't right on a Sunday back in 2015 when I was visiting a church with a friend. And it was on a Sunday that I otherwise would have forgotten about, but it was the Sunday following a national tragedy. And earlier that week, a gunman had gone into an AME church in downtown Charleston and opened fire, and 9 people had died. And the gunman had left online these racist manifestos before his crime. And I remember church that Sunday because I was left with this distinct feeling that something wasn't right, because there was no mention of anything that had happened just 2 days before. There was no mention in the sermon and no mention. We didn't pray for the victims in the prayers of the people. And for me, it was sort of a loud silence, and I imagine that others might have felt the same way, or maybe not. But for me, the silence was loud that day because church is supposed to be a place where we can take a break from pretending that everything's okay, both with ourselves and in the world around us. Part of what we do on Sunday mornings is to pause and take a close look at what's happening in our interior life and in the world, and to be able to tell the truth about these things. Or at least we should be able to do that. The prophet Jeremiah was in the business of telling the truth. He evaluated his own society and saw signs of unfaithfulness all around him. And he saw people trusting in the security that they could amass by their own means instead of trusting in God. And Jeremiah had especially harsh words for the clergy at the time, who were preaching what the people wanted to hear, and that's it. The clergy were giving people assurance that worshiping the God of Israel was the path to prosperity and security. And the clergy were also just assuring people that all was well and all would be well. But Jeremiah knew this wasn't true, and this was his plight. Society was unraveling before him, and everyone around him just wanted continued assurance that everything was fine. Jeremiah is sometimes known as the weeping prophet because he saw what others didn't, he said what others wouldn't, and he was persecuted for it. It was a very lonely way to live, I can imagine. Let's listen again to the words of the prophet from this morning. Oh, that my head were a spring of water, and my eyes a fountain of tears, so that I might weep day and night for the slain of my poor people. Now, imagine being seated next to Jeremiah at a dinner party. Or perhaps you can imagine being seated next to Jeremiah at a dinner party because perhaps you too have been through such intense grief that is so isolating, and it feels like the rest of the world is just going on as usual without you. But few prophets probably helped Jesus to understand himself as much as Jeremiah did. Like Jeremiah, Jesus often had strong and polarizing things to say to the people around him. Take this morning's gospel reading, for example, where Jesus concludes this enigmatic parable. He concludes plainly that you cannot serve God and wealth. That's not something you would say if you wanted to win friends and influence people. In a similar way to Jesus, the prophet Jeremiah's enemies tried to silence him. They tried anything they could. He was kicked out of the temple, he was jeered at, and he was ostracized. And these things nearly broke him as a man, and he makes it known. There is a lot of complaining in the book of Jeremiah. But to his credit, he never stopped speaking the truth. The prophet's words reflect God's remorse over the choices of the people and the ensuing consequences of their choices. It's kind of like when a parent is angry with the decisions that their child has made because those decisions have put their child in danger. This type of anguish, sort of like parental anguish, it's just a side of love. It's an anguish that's evident in many of the prophets as they express God's hope for God's people. And it's this persistent theme throughout the prophets of evil to be resisted, for an end to unjust economic practices, unjust courts, or a failure to properly care for the widow and the orphan or the foreigner in the land. Since the earliest days of Christianity, the vows of Christian baptism have begun with the renunciation of evil and the profession of faith. We're going to have a baptism at the 11:15 service, and one of the things that the sacrament of baptism asks the godparents and the parents and the baptizand is, do you renounce the evil powers of this world that corrupt and destroy the creatures of God? Now, I don't know about you, but sometimes it might feel sort of like disjoining to be saying these words about evil while there is, in our tradition, it's oftentimes a child or an infant being baptized, and it's this joyous occasion. And here we are talking about evil and what's going on. And this phrase can be jarring, but it is contemporary and it is urgent. Sometimes it can be difficult to understand the church's teaching on evil, and I think that's because evil is a shapeshifter by nature, and oftentimes it eludes our efforts to pin it down. Evil powers come in all shapes and sizes and will do anything to keep us disconnected from God's love. In the midst of abundance, evil can make us feel like we don't have enough money or time or love. Evil can make us think that we don't have what it takes to do the right thing. Or evil can be that voice in our head telling us that we are only as good as our addictions, or that we're no better than the worst thing that we've ever done. But what God's love does is it frees us to tell the truth about the influence of evil in our lives and the world around us, and to refuse to obey or follow or be influenced by it. Evil wins when we do nothing in the face of it. Back to baptism. One of the reasons why private baptisms have been discouraged in the history of the church is that the vows that we take, like the one we're talking about right now, are so enormous that we can't do them by ourselves. We need a congregation, a community to support one another through these endeavors and over and over again, because we need to renounce evil over and over again. It's not a one-time thing. Jeremiah tried to wake his people up so that they would see what was going on around them. He failed with Jerusalem, but his words can resonate with the generations that have come after. It might be easy for us to sort of write off those ancient Israelites worshiping the wooden idols, but he asks us today still, what is it that controls our life? Where are we going for love? Jeremiah's truth-telling cost him dearly, but it provided hope for the future, because later, the generations that came after him understood that it was the weeping prophet who was telling the truth. And what Jeremiah did is, it's a pretty lofty thing, and it might feel disconnecting or irrelevant for you and me as we go from here and go about our week. But telling the truth is really just a series of choices that we make throughout the day. Every day, we can ask God for the capacity to recognize evil when we see it and for the ability to tell the truth. It could be as simple as looking around and asking ourselves, where is this power operating in the world and where is it infiltrating our own hearts and minds? The Spirit of Truth helps us distinguish between the false peace that the clergy of Jeremiah's day were preaching and the true peace of God's infinite love for each and every single one of us. Together, with everyday words and actions, we take down the powers of this world that corrupt and destroy the creatures of God. It is with Christ and in Christ and through Christ that we can live out the vows of our baptisms. And we need Jesus to do that, and we need one another.